sometimes our girlfriends complain about their husbands, we have a role to play too. We can diminish the bond of marriage in that moment, or we can build it up. And so we have roles that we play outside of the context of somebody else's covenant.
Welcome back to Study with Friends, a weekly dive into the questions and answers we find in the Bible, the church, and the broader Christian faith. I'm Paige, and today we are continuing our study of the Sermon on the Mount. The format for this study is different in that it's an 8-week program with 5 daily segments designed to help you take a much deeper dive into Jesus' words and their application for your life. This is currently week 5, but you can find the previous week's recordings, the homework, and many more resources all on our website, studywithfriends.org.
Week 5, day 3. And this day's passage is Matthew 27 to 32. Quick question. In your Bible, are there headings over those two segments? What are the headings if you have them?
Adultery in the heart and marriage is sacred and binding.
Ooh, that's more where I'm going. But what do some other Bibles say?
Lust, divorce.
Yeah.
Mine, same.
Yeah, mine says adultery, divorce. Sure, these passages definitely talk about those things. But I'd like to set our minds in a bit of a different way and suggest that actually what Jesus is doing here is not just warning us that lust and divorce are serious things to consider, but actually inherent in the way he's teaching us about it, I believe that he's elevating intimacy. And so whenever possible, I think it's useful to understand what we're being prohibited from doing, but also understand what the partner positive thing might be. And so I'd like to think of these passages not necessarily as punitive or negative, like don't, but also do. God has a design for intimacy, and it's beautiful, and it is a reflection of the kingdom in many ways. And so that's what I want us to talk about today. So Ryan, would you read Matthew 5, 27 to 30?
You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than your whole body be cast into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell.
Okay, that's an intense teaching, and I'm not trying to water it down. I want to say that again. I just want us to make sure that we're taking it with the don't do this, but definitely do that. First, let's receive it as the intense passage that it is. Ryan, there's a couple of things in here. First, I just cliff noted it for you. The commandments that he's hitting here are the 7th about adultery and the 10th about coveting your neighbor's wife. So one of the things, Ryan, that he's doing here is he's helping us to understand where those sins originate. Can you tell me what you see there?
They originate in like the impurity in our hearts, right? Like lust burning. But the Lord has these set in place because he's protecting something very holy and pure that is only to be found in marriage, which I don't know of because I'm not married. But I know that he places it very high because like we are his bride too as the church. And like that relationship is so valuable and important. And like we should seek to be pure in our thoughts towards people, not allow lust to burn in our hearts because it's real and it's there, but it doesn't mean that it's holy.
I just personally noticed that there's a heart and eye calling out here. And in the Bible, a lot of times when it says set your heart or cast your eye on something, that's interchangeable and it means you're making an intention toward that thing. And so I want to just raise that up. And then I actually ask Eva to read out of Job, and we're going to note the heart and eye connection that Job made as Job was a righteous man. So let's note his connection. Job 31, 1 through 10.
I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? What would be my portion from God above and my heritage from the Almighty on high? Is not calamity for the unrighteous and disaster for the workers of iniquity? Does not he see my ways and number all my steps? If I have walked with falsehood and my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed in a just balance, and let God know my integrity. If my step has turned aside from the way, and my heart has gone after my eyes, and if any spot has stuck to my hands, then let me sow and another eat. and let what grows for me be rooted out. If my heart has been enticed toward a woman, and I have lain in wait at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind for another, and let others bow down on her.
Do you hear a heart and eye connection there?
Yeah, I mean, what our eyes see are heart desires. It's kind of a innate human reaction. But I think here he's defending himself against some accusers. You know, he's had so much calamity on him. So they're saying, oh, you must have done something wrong. You must have done. But he's saying, no, I've made a covenant with my eyes. Mm-hmm. I have sworn not to do these things that you're saying that I did, because he knows that connection.
Yeah. Why would he make a covenant with his eyes? What does that even mean?
He's made a promise not to live unrighteously, not to uphold God's
Yeah, but specifically
law. not to look
right,
not to
look at look. Things he shouldn't be looking at. I mean, porn,
stay away from that.
Yeah, like yeah. Let's be just real.
Yeah.
There are things that we can decide to look at or not look at. And okay, porn is obviously a lot of people struggle with it, so I'm not diminishing it. But it also includes what's the content of the movies I'm watching? What's the contents of the books I'm reading? That is a promise I make with my eyes.
Yeah.
It's just that simple. I love that you expanded on it, because you were like, he was accused and context. I love it. But there's also an on the nose moment there, which is I made a promise with my eyes. My heart, my spirit, the faithful part of me made a promise that my eyes would also obey and honor God. And that's so practical. I also think that Cheryl can deepen this for us from 2 Peter 2, verse 14. Would you read that?
They have eyes full of adultery, insatiable for sin. They entice unsteady souls. They have hearts trained in greed, accursed children.
Is he talking about God's faithful ones?
No.
Okay. Who's he talking about? And there's a hint at probably the heading of chapter 2 for you.
False prophets and teachers.
Right. Okay. These false teachers have eyes full of adultery. Mm. They never stop sinning. They seduce the unstable. They are experts in greed and a cursed brood. That's what my NIV says. Do you notice anything here, again, where that sin starts, Cheryl? What's the tie-in here?
The eyes.
Yeah.
You know, the eyes and the heart.
So, you know, again, like that bottle that we're shaking, sin that's starting inside us turns into outward behavior. And I think it's just really important for us to recognize, again, there are very practical ways that we can just protect ourselves from that flirtation with sin. I mean, that's different for all of us. And I want to say that because I think it's really important. Not everybody struggles with the same things. And so there are some prescriptive things here that everyone should adopt. But for example, I don't really find watching action movies to cause me to feel sinful. That is not a sin that I struggle with. So when I watch an action movie, I don't feel motivated to go seek my own vengeance. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a softball example. Some people struggle with watching romantic movies. And so I'm going to leave that at that, right? So, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm using movies. It's not the only place we should examine it. If we're constantly in conversation with God and we're watching something or doing something, he's going to convict us and be like, okay, this is not okay for you right now. Maybe later, maybe after I grow you, sanctify you, mature you, this isn't going to be such a stumbling block. But right now it is. So let's make a covenant with the members of your body. Let's make a covenant that you are going to uphold and that you're not going to let this thing be a stumbling block. And I think that it's very personal. There are movies and there are shows and there are books we could all think of that people inside the church would judge you if they knew you were watching them or reading them. But you in your heart know if it's truly a stumbling block or not. If you're allowing the Lord to sanctify you and continue that work, then he's going to teach you. Okay, this isn't for you. You can't. You're going to stumble over this. It's just not worth it. Get away. Get it behind you. Run from it. Flee from it. You know, again, I would look to that list in Galatians. There are some basic things. Run from these things. They're never okay. But then there are some other things that are in a gray area. So I just think we need to give each other grace, not condemn each other. That is for the Lord to do, but let the Lord do it. Let him do the work and be open to it and listening to it as we consider what we're doing with our bodies and our hearts and our minds and our eyes. So I want to go into a super delicate area, which is divorce. Again, I'm going to say in Appendix B, of the homework. There are resources. They are very good resources. I had a cohort of about 8 pastors who helped me with this study. And so I highly recommend the resources, but specifically the resources on divorce. We're going to do a little bit with it. We won't do enough with it for those who are victimized by this issue. However, I'd like to look at the passage. So we're looking at Matthew now 5:31-32. And Cheryl, I'm going to have you read Deuteronomy 24:1-4, because this is the passage, unlike the other passages before, where it's clearly one of the commandments when we named it. I want to also show you what the reference is here, where he says, it has been said, but I tell you, because this one isn't as on the nose as a commandment. It's not as obvious. So we want us to read the passage so that we can have some context in that way, and then we'll work through it in other ways as well. So Cheryl, would you read Deuteronomy 24:1-4, please?
When a man takes a wife and marries her, if then she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some indecency in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house, and she departs out of his house, and if she goes and becomes another man's wife, and the latter man hates her and writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house, or if the latter man dies, who took her to be his wife, then her former husband, who sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife after she has been defiled. For that is an abomination before the Lord, and you shall not bring sin upon the land that the Lord your God is giving you for an inheritance.
So tell me, what is he doing here with that passage? Just let's get real high level with it. Deuteronomy 24:1-4 says this, what Cheryl just read. But Jesus says what he says in verse 32. So what is he saying? But I tell you, let me read it. But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality makes her the victim of adultery, and anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. And I will say that this is reiterated in Matthew 19:3-9, which we're not going to read. But it is reiterated there, and I think that's noteworthy. What is Jesus doing with that Deuteronomy passage? By deepening it or reframing it. What's he doing here?
Well, they were coming up with all kinds of ways to skirt. How can they divorce their wives for any reason, really? Mm-hmm. And Jesus saying, nope, there isn't any reason except for sexual immorality. They were just, again, not doing what they should have been doing, which was protecting their wives mm-hmm. and loving their wives and sacrificing for their wives. Instead, they were casting them aside, and he's calling them out.
So interesting. I wasn't going to read this, but I do think that it's underscored in the Matthew passage. So I'm going to quickly reference. I'm in Matthew 19. The whole passage is 3-9. But to underscore what you just said, Eva, and this is red letter. This is Jesus talking. He says, starting at 3, it says, some Pharisees came to him to test him. They asked, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? To your point, Eva, mm-hmm. because they were playing around with all that. And here he says, haven't you read that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female and said, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. And then they go on to ask about the Deuteronomy passage. And Jesus says, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. But it was not this way from the beginning. I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for section, so he's reiterating what he said in the sermon. So there's a little bit more depth here in the Matthew 19 passage that underlines what you just said. They were looking for some loopholes.
Yep.
And he was closing up those loopholes because Jesus loves to close up a loophole. That's what he's doing with the sermon, right? That's what he's doing all through this whole text. We talked about it, about murder. We talked about all of it. You've got to really take it to heart. Okay, so what I think, and I'm going to take teacher's privilege here, is that there are 3 precepts that we should probably take away from this passage and so that we can better understand God's view of divorce. And I'll say all 3 of them, and then we're going to dive into them a little bit. The first is that marriage is a covenant, and God takes covenants very seriously. So divorce destroys something that God highly values. So I think the covenantal element of marriage is one of the reasons that God has his view on divorce. The second is that marriage is based on selfless love. You were saying that the other day. I think day one you said that. And selfless love is the kind of discipleship that Jesus is teaching throughout the sermon. And so divorce destroys that element of discipleship. And then the second is that God often uses marriage in scripture as a reflection or example of his faithfulness to his people. And you just said that. And so a divorce destroys that reflection of a completely faithful God. And so I want to dig into those a little bit, but I wanted to set the table a little. So Ryan, I'm going to come back to you for the first one, which is God takes covenants very seriously. And I'd love you to read Mark 10, verse 9. And tell me if you can paraphrase that to underpin my thoughts. And maybe if you think I'm wrong, you can also tell me that too.
It says, therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. Wait, what did you say?
Well, it's so funny because we hear that, you know, if you've ever been to a wedding, this is one of those passages that almost becomes white noise. But here I'm lifting it up as God takes covenants. This is a covenant. And we could spend a lot of time on this. There's so much depth to how marriage reflects Old Testament covenants and what he's calling a man and woman to be in covenantally. But that's what I was going for. What God has joined, let no man separate. Do you think what I'm saying about this first precept is an important thing to think about when it comes to divorce with respect to how God views covenants? It doesn't matter how we view them. Let's all agree people don't care about the promises they make.
Yeah.
In our sinfulness, we mess that up. But what I want to talk about is how God views this. So tell me what you think about that.
Yeah, I think what you're saying, I agree with that. And just like for an unmarried person like myself, I always try and remember like the Lord is my husband. And I think about that, like the Lord has never left me. I've been unfaithful to him. Like I have ran to other gods and I have like allowed idols to build in my life, but he has never left. Like he has remained faithful and like he stays with me. And like, yeah, he doesn't allow us to be set apart. And like, and then I come back and I remember like, you are my maker. Like my maker is my husband. And like,
I should have given you the third precept because that was, I love what you're saying.
Yeah. Cause like, I don't fully have a lot of depth of understanding.
Personal knowledge.
Yeah. Like personal.
Yeah. Yet.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Well, Ken, let me ask you a hard question, but as a single person, what might a single person do to interfere with the covenant of marriage?
Just like have sex outside of marriage. Yeah.
Or what if you met a married guy that you thought was great and you thought he was not rightly married and he should be yours?
Yeah. He could come in between that.
Right. So you are disrupting a covenant that God has created.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are ways that people who are living in singleness can be disruptive. Mm-hmm. And let me say this. Those of us who are married and we have girlfriends, and sometimes our girlfriends complain about their husbands, we have a role to play too. We can diminish the bond of marriage in that moment, or we can build it up. And so we have roles that we play outside of the context of somebody else's covenant. Just practically speaking, we should think about those things, that we are going against a covenant and we should take that seriously. You know, we all have that. We're frustrated. The tribe is there for a reason. We need to say some stuff. But the Christ honoring, the kingdom response to that is, let me pray for your marriage. Let me pray for your husband. Not, oh, he's a dog. I mean, he may be a dog. And I've had really close friends who have ended up divorced. There's one whom I love. Her horrifying marriage was such a stumbling block to me because I kept wanting to be murderous towards that man. I mean, he was horrifying to her. And she was so faithful. And she's like, God has not called me out. It is not time for me to leave. And I was like, it is time for you to leave. And that was a stumbling block for me. I was sinning because the Lord told her that's between her and the Lord. And I wanted her to be protected. And I thought she deserved better. But that's a mess. This is what I'm saying. This situation is a mess. And so we have to be careful and guard our mouths, our eyes, our hearts, our countenance. I mean, I could say things to you with nonverbals. I can be like, I'll pray for him. You know, so I'm saying I'll pray for him. But what I really mean is I'll pray for him. You know, OK, so then the next one that I wanted to raise up is the fact that marriage is based on selfless love, which is the kind of discipleship that Jesus is teaching throughout the sermon. And you made a great example of the model of Christ and the church, which is great because that's actually the third precept. So, but let's focus on the second precept because I think it would be easy for us to drift into that place again. But let's think about the model of selfless love as a call to kingdom living. And I would like Eva to read Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4, and then maybe paraphrase that in the context of marriage for me.
Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others.
So that's a global command to the church and at large, which means it's also a command to us in our marriages. Okay, I'm not reaching here. The marriage is a Christian relationship. So can you paraphrase that scripture for me in a marriage context?
It's thinking of the other like you would yourself, mm-hmm. obviously. Being interested in them and their interests. I'm kind of twisting that a little bit, but, you know, what are their interests?
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about them. If you're thinking about somebody else, you're not thinking about yourself. You need to be considerate. I mean, there's just so much of the fruit of the spirit, all of this that ties in with how we should be with our spouse.
If I say thinking of my spouse in humility, thinking of my spouse as better than me, I don't do that a lot. I don't do that well. I'm human, and I'm one of my things is I think of myself. That's one of my sins. I think of myself and I want to take care of myself. And it comes from brokenness because, you know, whatever. But this is a command to think of my husband as better than me. If I think that he is better than me, that changes how I treat him. And if I'm being humble and saying he's better than me, then I behave completely differently. And if I'm not just his interests, like his hobbies, but no. What's best for him? Mm-hmm. And if what's best for him is in conflict with what I think is best for me, then he wins. That's radical. And that's the selfless love that's being taught in the sermon. And I think that Philippians passage shines a nice light on practically how that might look.
I think there's a little more to that because of things in Corinthians also talks about our roles in marriage too. The being sacrificial as the wife, I think, can sometimes look a little bit different than being sacrificial as a husband in the ways that we need to respect them and how they need to lead the family in that kind of context. It's the same selfless love, but it sometimes can look a little different mm-hmm. when you actually living it out.
It can. And there are biblical precepts to examine of what God called us to do. And then there are also personal things for us to examine of like, what does this unique individual need? Is that okay to say?
Yeah, I agree.
I don't want to conflict with what you're saying.
No, I agree.
And then the last precept is that God often uses marriage as a reflection of his love for his people. And that happens all over the Bible. Hosea, you mentioned it. God is the Lord is my husband. Christ calls the church his bride. There's all throughout. There's these Old and New Testament, because I said Hosea. There's all these references to how God shows us his covenantal love and faithfulness for his people and uses marriage as an example of that. So the third precept that I think we should examine when we consider how God views divorce is that it destroys the reflection of a God who is completely faithful. And you really hit on that. That's why I was like, I should have given you the third precept. So it was great. You teed it up. But Cheryl, would you read Ephesians 5, 25 to 29? And then give me a reflection of that in the marriage scenario.
Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one has ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church.
Are there other places you can think of that God uses marriage as an example of his faithfulness?
Oh.
All throughout the scriptures. When it comes to covenant faithfulness, it's important for us to understand how that stands apart as an example of God's faithfulness and that the destruction of a marriage destroys that reflection.
Thanks again for joining us today on Study with Friends. We hope that you've found some deep truths that will strengthen your walk with Jesus. We here at Study with Friends are modeled more like a small group, and we encourage you to find one through your local church. Make sure to find a church where the Bible is taught in every situation. Study with Friends is a completely donor-supported organization. If you've been blessed by our ministry, would you consider donating? Monthly partnerships are particularly helpful, but no amount is too small. We also love to hear from you. You can stay connected on all the major social media platforms or by email. You can find links to all of these on our website, studywithfriends.org. If you've missed any episodes and are out on the go, be sure to catch the ladies on any of your favorite streaming platforms. Or you can catch the ladies via video on YouTube. We hope you have a great week, and we'll see you next time when we study with friends.